Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us as we roll through together on this Thursday. Penn State and Rutgers will be playing their game Saturday night at High Point Solutions Stadium in Piscataway. Dan Duggan, beat writer, NJ.com, joins us. Last time we talked, my friend, was back on July 1st when Rutgers officially entered the conference. Welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, that seems like a long time ago. Been a busy couple of months.
Been a busy couple of months indeed. All right, let's get to it. Let's talk about atmosphere going into this one. You talk to enough fans. You're around enough. So, Dan, tell me, what is the feeling with Rutgers going into its initial conference game and the fact that it's Penn State?
I mean, it's really through the roof, and it's really heightened because there's a ton of excitement, like we said, on July 1st. But, you know, that was more like just a ceremonial, you know, type of entry to the Big Ten. This is the real deal on Saturday night, you know, when the lights come on and it's on the Big Ten Network and they're actually doing the whole pregame show here and you know, you get a chance to play Penn State, who is obviously a program that Rutgers is hoping develops into a rival. I think it's going to be crazy. I mean, the game that always kind of gets referenced here is the 2006 game when they upset Louisville, and that was a wild atmosphere, and I think that this very well should rival that.
You also took time and made a tour around the Big Ten, Dan, including stopping here at State College. What did you learn along the way of interest that maybe you didn't know before?
Yeah, I hit a few of the spots. It was tough to logistically put them all together. I was at Penn State and Ohio State were the two big ones I hit. And it wasn't even that much of a surprise. I kind of had a pretty good sense that, you know, just the facilities at those schools were going to kind of be, you know, cut above. I mean, Rutgers has good facilities for their size, but it just dwarfed by, you know, 100,000-seat stadium when you're talking about 52,000. And just some of the, Ohio State had some pretty exorbitant just features that you just don't have here. But I think that was just the biggest thing, is you realize, you know, just some of these schools are kind of operating on a different playing field, just with the financial resources they have, whereas Rutgers, that's kind of always been a struggle. And it's really going to be probably the biggest thing that they're going to combat as they just try to compete. You know, just financially, they're always going to be playing catch-up.
The other part is about attitude. Penn State, of course, has played Rutgers before, so it's a familiar team to Penn State fans, even though it's been a while since they've played one of them. It's still familiar. Ohio, a place like Ohio State, no. Was there a difference in perception about Rutgers from Penn State to the other places you went?
No, I think it's probably pretty general. I think there's a lot of skepticism around the Big Ten. I mean, you might be able to speak better for Penn State fans, but I just, from interactions on Twitter and stuff, you know, if I write something about Penn State related to Rutgers, I usually have some Penn State fans kind of just dismissing, like, any notion of that being a rival or anything like that. So I think a lot of people in the Big Ten are just kind of looking at Rutgers as, you know, not really ready for prime time. You know, obviously this is a great opportunity on Saturday night for Rutgers to prove otherwise. But yeah, I didn't sense it was much different, you know, Penn State to Ohio State to any other, you know, schools I've dealt with or talked to. So I think it's just a big thing where Rutgers is going to have to prove themselves. And again, like I said, you know, the Saturday night's as good a chance as any to make the first step on that process.
All right. Now, that's the perception of those in the Big Ten toward Rutgers. Now let's turn it around. What's Rutgers and the Rutgers fans' perception of the Big Ten?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people initially looked at the names on the schedule and kind of said, whoa, like, this is going to be crazy. And I think that, you know, they're going to be going into some big-time atmospheres that they've never been in, and, you know, there are a lot of traditional powers. But I think just even watching the first 2 weeks of the schedule play out, you know, a lot more optimism has kind of been, you know, fueled into this program. Not that Rutgers has looked like world beaters, but you see some of these other Big Ten teams have, you know, have struggled, and I think it just looks wide open. So they're saying, hey, you know, maybe we can make some noise. And again, it's still early, and who knows how things will shake out with some of those teams that are off the rough starts, or if Rutgers can, you know, keep this going. I think that's going to be, a little bit of a tall task. But I think, yeah, there's a lot of optimism now that, hey, this isn't the, Ohio State of the past or the Michigan of the past. It seems a little bit more vulnerable. And Rutgers has a chance to maybe make some noise, which a lot of people probably didn't expect.
Dan Dugg at NJ.com joining us. Penn State Rutgers coming up Saturday night at High Point Solutions Stadium. Rutgers has won its first two games. Yes, one was against Howard, but the other one was a win at Washington State. And what did they show you in that one that impressed you?
I think the biggest thing they showed was, their offense looks really strong under Ralph Regan. I mean, he's kind of been the biggest offseason signing for getting recruits. I mean, he was the biggest guy, Kyle Flood landed, just adding him to the staff. And the offense is off to, a great start in both games. And going out to Washington State, knowing that was going to be a shootout, and, they put up 41 points and, made the plays late when they needed to. The defense made plays in that Washington State game that maybe they didn't make last year, but, enough to pull out a win. But if you step back, you look at some of the numbers, they're a little scary. You have 532 passing yards for a secondary that, came in with a lot of question marks. Those obviously still exist. Again, that's why this week will be a real test because, with Washington State and Mike Leach's offense, everybody's going to give up a lot of yards. But I think that's the biggest positive has been the offense. I think the defense is still a lot of question marks, and obviously that Washington State game didn't really answer any of those.
Gary Nova. Every year, Gary Nova, they go in with high hopes. He usually gets off to a good start, and then in each of the last 2 years, he's been replaced down the stretch. Does he look like a different guy that's a year older and with Ralph Regan?
He does, but you make a good point. He's gotten off to great starts the last 2 years, so he looked pretty good then too. So I guess the jury is still out a little bit, but I think that just working with Regan, I think it's by far the best offensive mind he's had. I think he picked up some things that Gary was doing mechanically and just in this decision-making process that hadn't been touched on before. So if Gary's able to, keep that when the bullets are flying and they run into some adversity, we'll see. But yeah, I think that he does look, he looks better. But two games, and he's had good two-game stretches in the past. So I think we're going to have to wait and see a little bit on that.
Paul James, team's leading rusher, also had a couple of touchdowns on long receptions last week for Rutgers. What makes him a good running back?
Yeah, I mean, he's really one of the guys who I think got slept on just coming into the season when people talk about Rutgers, because he was a stud last year, too. The first four games, he was actually leading the nation in rushing, and then he had a leg injury, and that knocked him up for four games. And then he really never was completely 100% even when he came back. But he's just a guy who he runs hard. He's a good combination of everything you want. He runs hard. He's got a little bit better speed than you'd think because, he's broken big plays in both of the first two games, and no one's catching him from behind. He's just steady. I mean, he's like a 5 yards to carry guy. He's always going to run through arm tackles, and he's not exactly the most elusive guy, but he'll make people miss. He's really just got a good combination of all the skills you want in a running back.
It is an offensive line that has combined for 109 career starts. You referenced Ohio State. Ohio State had a group that started as a sophomore, and they were okay, and then as juniors became really good, and last year as seniors they were outstanding. The best part of Ohio State's football team last year, in my opinion, was not Braxton Miller, it was their offensive line. Now they're rebuilding that offensive line. I referenced the 109 starts for Rutgers offensive line. How good are they?
Yeah, I think that experience is huge. I mean, they have some talent on this line already, and to give them that extra year of continuity, they had the whole offseason to work together. They have a new offensive line coach, and Mitch Browning, who's been a pretty solid assistant throughout his career. He's at Minnesota for a long time with some of the great running attacks they had there. Caleb Johnson, the left guard, he's an NFL guy. He actually flirted with leaving last year after his junior year. The left tackle, Keith Lumpkin, is a junior. He's a guy who's probably going to be on the NFL radar, and the right guard, Chris Muller, is a sophomore, and he's probably in the same boat. So, again, you have the talent, you have the experience, you have the continuity. So a lot of things add up that this should be a really strong, strong point of the team. They've gotten off to a great start. At least the running game is doing well. Nova has had time. But, of course, they haven't played the defenses, that they're going to see as the schedule progresses. So we'll see if they're, going to be a good line or a great line. I think that's still to be determined. But they've definitely made some major strides.
What does Kyle Federico mean to this team, and also what kind of return game does Rutgers have?
Federico's almost got a little bit of a Gary Nova streak to him, where he's had flashes where he looks really good, and you're like, okay, this is the guy, and then he'll get really inconsistent. And, you know, last year at one point they flirted with replacing him, but he ended up finishing the season, you know, making 6 out of his last 7 kicks, and again he comes into this year and looked really good, but he missed the field goal last week. I mean, you know, no one's going to make 100%, but he's certainly not the most reliable guy in the world. So that's probably a question mark, and especially if this is a close game. It'll be interesting to see how he responds. The return game, they have Janarian Grant, who's a sophomore, who is a really explosive guy. I think he could really be an X factor in the game. He hasn't, you know, broken that big return yet this year, but he had a couple touchdowns on returns last year, and it is, you know, kind of seems like a matter of time before he gets one, just because he's just really an explosive guy when he has the ball in his hands.
He's also an outstanding wide receiver that Penn State fans need to keep an eye on as well. You referenced the defense. Washington State throws the ball all the time, to the point where Oregon's defensive coordinator, after Oregon had a huge lead, was mad at Mike Leach. Why do you keep throwing the ball? Just, like, take a knee and get out of here. And that caused a problem last year. What do you consider to be the strength of the Rutgers D, and what do you have concerns about with the Rutgers D?
It's pretty cut and dry. I mean, the front seven, especially against the run, is really the strength, and then the secondary is really just the weakness. You know, the linebackers are kind of split. They're really strong against the run, and, you know, they leave a little bit to be desired in pass coverage. But I think the defensive line is probably the most intriguing part of the team, as far as they go about 9 guys deep. They have some young talent. This kid, Kamoko Ture, who basically had never played football until a couple years ago, and he's a redshirt freshman. In his first 2 games, he has 3 sacks. He's just pretty much going on raw athleticism. Has a long way to go, just, you know, by learning the game and being consistent, but he's just kind of one of those freaks that comes off the edge that can really be a difference maker. They have Darrison Hamilton at defensive tackle, who, you know, maybe might be their best player. He's a guy who's going to be a factor. And the linebackers have a really experienced crew there. And like I said, it'll be interesting to see how Penn State's run game does against Rutgers, because, you know, Penn State's obviously been struggling running the ball, and Rutgers has a great run defense, so that's a matchup that probably should favor Rutgers. But by the same token, Christian Hackenberg must be kind of licking his chops looking at this Rutgers secondary, which the cornerbacks is a revolving door. Seems like the same deal as last year, where guys are banged up, and they just haven't been able to find the right combination there. Like I said, I actually saw some glimmers of improvement against Washington State, but it's hard to measure just because anyone's going to pull out yards for those guys.
Right. Dan Duggan, AJ.com, joining us. Rutgers, of course, independent for a long time, then into the Big East. Is this the moment that Rutgers feels long-term they have finally stabilized Rutgers athletics by getting into the Big Ten?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that's really the biggest reason for excitement here. I mean, obviously there's smaller things that you're excited about. You're excited about the chance to, you know, have a rivalry with Penn State. You're excited about, you know, playing these other powers. But I just think the fact that they finally have some stability, you know, because they were an afterthought in the Big East, because, you know, more of a basketball conference, and then, you know, being in the American, that obviously wasn't going to be a long-term, you know, good place to be. So landing in the Big Ten, it just gives this athletic department so much stability. Obviously, when those checks start rolling in, that's going to go a long way. So, yeah, I think that it's really looked at by Rutgers fans and just, you know, the athletic department at the university is really just the perfect place for them to be.
And for the fan base, do you sense the excitement about all of this, and do you think that excitement can stay 5 years from now, say, if things don't go well?
I mean, to answer your first question, sure. I mean, the excitement is like I said, it's really through the roof. I mean, I think that people who don't really know much about Rutgers are going to be pretty impressed by the atmosphere. Again, it's 52,000, not 107 or anything, but it's going to be wild here. The place is going to be rocking on Saturday night. You know, the fan base is just so hungry to kind of have a winner, and this would be such a big game for them to get. Yeah, 5 years down the road, if they're just getting, you know, beaten up and they turn into Purdue or, you know, Indiana, I'm sure the excitement will wane a little bit. It might not be as fun to have Penn State or Ohio State come in and beat you every year, but obviously they're not looking at it like that. They think that, you know, when things kind of fall their way, that it's like a little bit of a sleeping giant, you know, especially with all the Jersey high school talent. If they can ever find a way to keep those kids home, I think that, you know, they feel like this could be a great thing and really the launching pad to taking everything really to another level here.
turned into Purdue and Indiana, so you already have a handle on the conference.
Yeah, I'm learning quick.
Okay. Hey, Dan, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. I look forward to seeing you Saturday night in New Jersey, and we appreciate all the time you're giving us.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Dan Duggan, NJ.com, joining us on the show. We'll come back bottom of the hour with a news update here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hola, buenos dias. Guten Abend. How are you?
There we go. That's the one I always wait for. The SEC version.
Of course it is. You can take my echo out, too.
I could, but I'd rather not. It's more entertaining to leave it in. It's only in your headset, though.
Yes, but I can shut it. I can shut my part down.
I'm not going to comment.
Then you're on your own.
Not going to comment.
Then you're on your own. And I would say at that point to you, good luck.
Kevin Hershow makes its debut.
Radio station gets shut down, but it's good. All right.
Lots of FCC issues to deal with.
Well, man. let's talk about one of them right now. There's
right.
been the Ray Rice story has been there are very few stories that are messier than this one on multiple levels. The obvious is he decked her. She hit her head on the railing. She gets knocked out, and it's ugly. Okay? So obviously, first and foremost, that's it. How the NFL has handled it, we've discussed over and over again. When it originally came out, I said he should not be allowed to play a game until the first Sunday in November. I said he should not be allowed to be out there at all for any game during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, during the month of October, to go with September. And that would encompass 8 or possibly 9 games. And that was me watching her being dragged out of the elevator, not seeing what happened inside the elevator. He's been suspended indefinitely. He has contract terminated by the Ravens and so forth. How the NFL has handled it is obviously a bizarre trip, a 2-game suspension. Now they have put in a new policy that's a 6-game suspension. If it's a 6-game suspension, then why wasn't he suspended for 6 games?
Because there wasn't a policy right away.
No, there was a policy when they suspended him, Kevin.
Well, because the act occurred before the start of the policy.
Not really. The policy is domestic violence is 6 games. So he was suspended after the policy went into effect.
But the act, Steve, that is what we call in the law an ex post facto law. The event occurred before the effective date of the policy. So
in other words, someone that was Ray McDonald cannot be suspended for 6 games?
Well, they have a lot of flexibility in how they handle it. But my point is,
But my point is this. They don't know what they're doing.
Well,
that's my point.
That's painfully obvious.
Okay, my point is, okay, this happened. Boom. Two games. Boom. Well, okay, no. Now we're going to put in a policy from now on, six games. Boom. Then they see this, and then they suspend him indefinitely. Then they, you know, now they don't know if they had a possession of the tape, didn't have possession of the tape, and so on and so forth. It goes round and round. Did they lie about it, not lie about it? We don't know. And then there's the Ted Robinson story. Kevin's confused. He doesn't know who Ted Robinson is. All right.
Fill me in on the Ted Robinson side of the story, because I've been focusing on the Ray Rice story because there's so much going on there. And by the way, if the Associated Press story is right and someone at the NFL office did get this, this looks horrifically bad. Not because they didn't look at the video or said they didn't look at the video, but now everything Roger Goodell said on Monday night on CBS or Tuesday night, whenever they ran that on CBS, is a bold-faced lie.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, Kevin.
Why?
And see, this is where you have to be careful in the realm that we're in at the moment.
But that goes to
the Ted Robinson story I'm about to talk about. All right, this is part of the sidebar. If Roger Goodell did not see the video, and those around him in the upper floors in this decision-making didn't see the video because it didn't get to them, and he says that, then where's he lying?
That's not the lie. That's not the lie I'm referring to. I'm referring to where he says that they couldn't see the video because they couldn't get it from the police, because that's the part I'm talking about.
But what if he didn't know they had it?
But still, he said they couldn't get it. They couldn't even ask for it, he said.
Repeating once again, okay? If he doesn't think they have it and he has been told we can't get it, that's why he gives the answer he gives.
I understand that.
Okay?
That's not my argument.
Now, if he did and has lied about it, then at that point he should lose his job.
Yeah.
Okay? If he hadn't, no matter, even if somebody in the NFL had possession of it, he should not lose his job, because if he didn't know about it, then he didn't know about it.
You have to listen to what he said in the interview when I think it was CBS. He said it was never brought to my attention, or words to that effect, and he's claiming then that. He's couching his words to say, well, maybe it came to the NFL somewhere, but no one ever brought it to my attention. I didn't know about it. And that is a carefully phrased answer that I'm sure was discussed before he went on that interview.
But that's not what I'm debating about. I'm saying, now correct me if I'm wrong, he said they couldn't even ask for it because in an investigation, the police couldn't release that release it. However, the Associated Press story, and I may be wrong here, but I'd like to know, the Associated Press story said that the police, there was an officer that actually sent that to the NFL.
The interview that I saw or heard today indicated it was from an anonymous source. It didn't say law enforcement or not, that had sent it to this person at the NFL, and they played a copy of the phone call where that person supposedly at the NFL acknowledged receiving it and said some words about it.
That's the part where I was questioning.
But it didn't say law enforcement or not. It was very nebulous, and that whole phone call is really suspect in my mind.
First of all, no law enforcement would send an entity the tape. It's evidence.
Yeah, okay. That's first.
So that part makes complete sense. It's evidence. So law enforcement isn't going to send it to him. The laughable one has been, well, they could get it from Ray Rice's attorney. He had a copy of it. What attorney in America is going to send a copy of that to an employer?
So right, Steve.
Under attorney-client privilege. They're not going to do that. So that one's off the table. Right? Here's the next part. You know, TMZ, as a professional entity, is absolutely within its rights to pay for a copy of the tape if someone's willing to sell it to them. So TMZ's done nothing wrong. Now, reputable news services won't do that But I'm not saying TMZ. When I mean reputable, that's the wrong word. News services such as NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, and so forth are not going to pay for the tape. That's not their MO under news. But TMZ is a business that has a different way of doing its business, and there's nothing unethical about what they did to buy the tape. The next part is, I understand, though, have you noticed how there's a lack of, it's not the, in a world of HD, how that tape is not really that clear?
And not only that, but it's almost like watching stop animation.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
Okay. That's not actually the security camera footage from the hotel. That is somebody who taped.
Okay, that's a recording of
a recording.
A recording of the tape. It's a recording of the tape. That's how they got it. It wasn't like somebody said, here's the actual security footage. You take it. I'm selling it to you. Somebody recorded it separately, whether it was on a phone or whether it was on a palm quarter or something like that, of the security, and then sold it. Evidently, that's how it was done.
But I think it's important here to mention in the Associated Press story, and this is what the USA Today ran as well, a law enforcement official told the Associated Press he sent a video of Rice punching Janae Palmer, now Rice's wife, to an NFL executive 5 months ago. And then, of course, we get the rest of the story that it was a voicemail, and a female voice expresses, a voicemail on November 9th confirming the video arrived. A female voice expresses, thanks, you're right, it's terrible. And now, that's where I'm questioning Roger Goodell's comment about not being able to get the video.
Well,
now, okay. is this officer going outside of his...
But Kevin, hold on.
Okay.
Who is the person that accepted it? Who saw it? And then you're saying it's a female voice?
Yes.
What did she do or not do with the tape?
Great questions, yes.
Okay, so you've got to start separating here and stop leaping to conclusions. She didn't take the thing, go, hey, look what I got,
and I'm not even saying that.
Slow down.
I'm just talking about one thing that the commissioner said.
But he may have been saying something on his part where he sat back because he didn't know.
And you know,
if it doesn't get to him, how's he supposed to know about it?
And also, the so-called law enforcement official who said he did this goes completely unnamed. And
unnamed, and that's also unethical.
Yeah, USA Today should attribute that to the proper source.
Right? I mean, that the individual that did that part that sent it to the NFL, they're wrong. Okay? They're wrong, actually, in this. They shouldn't have done that. They have no right to do that. That would be, seriously, this is evidence in a case, correct, Bob?
It is, and it would have been kept, Steve, in an evidence locker with a serious protocol at the, I'm not sure if it's the Atlantic City Police Department, that would be my hunch, and or the District Attorney's Office, and it's evidence seizure and protocol is very detailed with all kinds of paper trails so that what we call the chain of custody when evidence is presented in court is unbroken and untampered. So there is a chain that is followed and, you know, with controls at every step of the way. So I question the law enforcement official. My guess, and it's an educated guess, but nevertheless a guess,
of course,
is that someone at the casino, which, as we know, was going out of business, who had access through the security department, may have just been able to parlay a large chunk of change from TMZ, knowing that he's probably not going to have a job or sheet.
Right.
And that's where I would look for the source.
Right, they recorded it however way, because that's not the actual security tape.
Right.
I mean, the physical one that they took out that night and have on file.
And the police would have taken it, Steve, and as the word is, placing it into evidence, which meant it would have probably gone in a sealed container. It would have had initialed by the officer who seized it. It would have gone into the evidence room where the person who's separate from that officer would also initial it. It would be assigned a location, et cetera, et cetera. And every time someone touched that piece of evidence, it would have been recorded.
Here's the next part. For all of this talk about, you know, TMZ was able to get it and the NFL wasn't. Right, Kevin?
I never said that.
You did. That's exactly what you said.
No, I did not.
Right.
I did not.
Yes, you did.
When?
All right. Okay. Yesterday, day before, today.
I said TMZ got it because somebody was willing. TMZ was willing to pay somebody for it.
But what took TMZ so long to get it? If they could have bought and paid for this thing back in March, April, May, June, July, August, they weren't able to get themselves by paying for it until September. They weren't able to get a copy by paying for it until September.
Fair enough, too.
What does that tell you? I mean, you know, okay, so when we're talking about having access to it, the NFL couldn't get it, but TMZ could get it. It took TMZ 7 months to pay for it to get it. I mean, 7 months to pay for it. The tape has been available in February, March, April, May, June, July, August, and into September. And they paid cash for it. I mean, I'm sure they didn't pay a small amount to get it. Because in terms of publicity, it's done a lot for TMZ to have it.
Oh, it's been right? Huge.
Right.
Huge.
So, you know, so believe me, I'm sure the sum is not a nominal sum that was paid. And even paying for it, it took them 7 months to get it.
Steve, I got Tony on the line from Shamokin, wants to chime in on the conversation.
Tony, I'm glad you called. Kevin's voice is getting high and fast.
From what I understand, what you are saying, the tape we're watching is a copy of the tape.
Evidently, it is a copy of the actual tape. Yeah,
most likely taken from a handheld device, you know, like you said, iPad or whatever they're called. Yeah.
Allegedly, I mean, I've heard that story put out. I think it may have been John Barr from ESPN that reported that.
Well, then the original tape would still be in the possession of the police. So how would the NFL possibly view any tape? And if it's a copy taken from an iPod or whatever, I mean, anything, that tape could have been doctored, altered, whatever. So there's no way we could possibly know. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, all of us have now seen it. I mean, it obviously is not doctored in any way. It's watching it through.
We didn't see the original.
Well, yeah, but Tony, it's pretty obvious. I mean, I've done enough editing in my lifetime in video where you can see edits. Okay.
Oh, I'm not saying it was. But why would the NFL look at anything but the original?
Well, that's an interesting question. Kevin, you take that one.
No, I just want to know, like I said, my question is, how did the NFL allegedly even get it? If it's not allowed if it's a piece of evidence that's supposed to be locked up, how did the NFL allegedly even get it sent to them? That's the real question.
Yep. Yeah, but one thing I've learned from all the scandals is don't speculate on anything.
Good point.
Exactly. That's exactly my point, which I'm trying to make to my broadcast partner here.
Let me offer another thing, Steve, to this discussion. Ray Rice was put into what we call an alternative program for domestic violence. But
in Center County, they would call it ARD.
Exactly. Yeah. And in New Jersey, they have a program. And if one fails to complete the program, they go back to where they were, they enter a plea of not guilty, and they potentially either have to change that plea to guilty or go to trial. And until and unless Mr. Rice or anyone similarly situated completes the equivalent ARD program, that videotape is going to remain in evidence till the very end.
Right.
So the DA's office, the Atlantic City Police, are not going to just ship it out somewhere because they may need that, and we have what's called the best evidence rule. When you go to court, you got to show the original or the best evidence.
See, and Tony makes a really good point. If it was sent to the NFL, it can't be the original.
Exactly.
It's a copy of a... So that's Tony's point, and Tony asks a very, very interesting question.